Next step, number 693, September 16, 2021.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. We reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Well, how do you do? And welcome to the next step. It's good to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about apologies. Well, not really. It's more of called apologetics. When you make up excuses, when you justify things that don't seem to make sense. But we'll be talking about that in a little bit. I want to start off with some exciting news. It took place last week. Actually, in the Mother See of Holy Etchmiadzin, there was an international religious freedom and peace conference. Wow, how's that for a title, right? And of all places, the first cathedral, the first standing Christian cathedral, Holy Etchmiadzin, right? Conference on International Religious Freedom and Peace. And you can say, well, this is just one of those conferences. Actually, it was everything besides what you might think it might be. I was very, very impressed having to read through some of the stuff. Some of it, of course, is, yeah, you know, it's there. But what was really impressive, really, really impressive, was a speech made by His Holiness Catholicos Katechin II. And I'll tell you why it was. Okay, but first, let me give you a little bit of background of what's going on, the conditions under which that speech was made, because we don't get this many opportunities as an Armenian church, small little church. We don't get an opportunity to host so many different people, so many different traditions, different Christian denominations and Christian churches. Confused? Difference between a denomination and a church? Well, the church is one, right? But there are denominations. There is a Christian church, and we believe that the Christian church is one. There are some denominations, and usually these are referred to in the sense of the non-apostolic, but Protestant denominations. But anyway, there was quite a large assortment of people. And don't worry, yes, there will be a link on today's show notes so you could read all about it. But I'm going to share with you some of it right now. It took place on September 10th at the Holy at the Mother See of Holy Etchmiadzin. But most of the press release is filled with names of people and everything. But let me get to some of the brunt of what this was all about. Okay, the messages particularly emphasized, the messages of the conference emphasized the need to prevent encroachments on the Armenian cultural and historical heritage in the territories under the control of Azerbaijan after the last war, as well as the importance of inter-religious dialogue as one of the most effective means of combating peaceful settlement of conflicts, national discrimination, and intolerance. The role of the Armenian Apostolic Church and various Christian structures in this process was highly appreciated. So some of the players that were there was the Reverend Christian Krieger, the president of the Conference of European Churches, Mr. Simon Maghalkian, a lecturer of international relations at the University of Colorado. So I'm reading this because it's important to see where these people are coming from and who these players are at this conference. Mr. Kerem Stepanian, human rights defender of the Republic of Artsakh. And let's see, Ms. Hajuti, author, cultural activist, and entrepreneur from the Netherlands. So again, a very large cross-section of different people. Let me see. I mean, most of these are like lectures. Lafayette College in Easton, USA. The director of the Center of Study in the Christian East at the University of Salzburg, Austria. So a very good cross-section of different people coming and sharing their ideas at this conference. And it was very exciting for me to hear, as I said a few minutes ago, one of the speeches which reverberated with me especially, and when I tell you why, I think you'll all get it. It's been the platform of In His Shoes for the last 20 years. But to hear it uttered from the mouth of the Catholicos of all Armenians was to me a very special moment in the history of the Armenian Church. And basically in a speech which he addressed to the conference, and it was a welcoming beginning, it was a preface to the conference, His Holiness remarked that the act of genocide of 1915 not being recognized properly led to the Holocaust, to genocide in Cambodia, genocide in Rwanda, and in Darfur. So by name he mentioned these four Holocaust genocides. And why is that important? This is the first time this has happened. This is the first time where you can make this direct correlation within the Armenian Church. Of course, we've made it for years. We've heard many of our friends out there talking about it, the importance of all genocides being considered. But for the head of the Armenian Church to come and understand, to share this understanding with the world, that one leads to the other, and to call it out by name, Darfur, Rwanda, Cambodia. And this was a big, big moment. And I'm going to put the link on the show notes. I invite you to read through it and read through some of the other people who spoke at the conference. And I will put a link to the Catholicos' message. It is in Armenian, and I hope that you can sift through it one way or another by going through the links. And what I'm really hoping for is that somebody's going to put up the translation shortly. So I will put the links on, and I invite you to, you know, do some searching around and get to what was being said. But for the most of it, this was an exciting moment. Exciting moment because when the head of the church proclaims it, it has a different level of weight. And I think we forget that a lot of times, especially people in the West. We go through this all the time here in the West because we are living in a democracy, whether it's here in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, in Australia. I mean, most of the world that is tuned into such things as podcasts, as free expression, will understand the value of a democracy where freedom reigns. And so it becomes difficult to, not defend, but to actually to say that you belong to a church, a system of faith that is not democratic, that is authoritarian, that is that has a system of totalitarianism or, yes, dictatorship, benevolent dictatorship. Let's call it benevolent. There's nothing that I'm hiding here, but it is a top-down system, and it's, we go through this all the time. People come up to me and they say, well, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you? Because we don't have a democracy, so to speak. Yes, there are bylaws which allow you to do, but the structure of the church is such that, much like the army, you've got your privates, you've got your corporals, your sergeants, your lieutenants, your captains, and eventually you get up to the general, and then you have a commander-in-chief. That's the structure within the military here in the United States. And the president happens to be the commander-in-chief. And if you're on the bottom of that totem pole, of that hierarchy, let's call it a hierarchy, and you're at the bottom and you're one of the privates, you don't get to tell the president this is what gets to happen. Now, technically, we say you can do that. How? Through the power of the vote. But you and I both know that it's not just one vote that counts. It means if you're at the bottom, you need to get that general consensus. You need to get people together. You need to rally people together so that they can vote out whatever position it is. Not so in the Armenian church. Not so in the traditional churches. Probably the most the one that most people are familiar with is the Roman Catholic Church. Familiar because it gets put on media. We get to see the process of picking a pope, and in our lifetime we've seen a few popes. I remember Pope Paul. After his death, there was Pope John Paul the First. Very few people remember him. His papacy was only 33 days, if I remember right. Yes, he passed away 33 days after he was elected pope. And Pope John Paul II of blessed memory came in. And we saw how he was elected. And he took on the same name as John Paul I to continue that spirit that the predecessors, Pope John and Pope Paul, had put into the Roman Catholic Church. But listen to what I'm saying. It's people, it's the cardinals, it's the bishops. I haven't brought up any people on the ground level, right? And we saw it after the passing of Pope John Paul II with the election of Pope Benedict. We saw what happened when a pope resigns and Pope Francis came in. We saw the election process. And along this way, I want you to think about it. Who are the people that are electing? Who are the people that do it? Now, in the case of the Armenian Church, yes, we have a little bit larger electoral college, so to speak, a larger field, because we have laity that participate in the election. But at the end of the day, the day-to-day runnings of the Armenian Church is run from the top down, from the Catholicos, who tells his bishops. The bishops in turn tell their priests, and their priests tell the people, and this is the form, and this is the way we go through things. And it's always amazing to me, because you know, you'll read about somebody writing something. The Armenian Church should do this. The Armenian Church should change the language. Armenian, who are you to say these things? Who do you think you are? I mean, first of all, it's always interesting to me, because most of the people who talk on this thing of what we should do are hardly people that attend. And you know what? Sometimes it's one of the excuses that we use for not attending, when in reality we realize that, hey, we just don't want to be part of it. So there's so many dynamics at play, so many different excuses, that the point of what I'm bringing about right now is, when you think about what the Armenian Church is, yes, it is defined by the people who are running it, and namely, you have a Catholicos of all Armenians who makes such an important statement. This is a statement that we should applaud, appreciate, understand, and most importantly, rally around. This is the Catholicos of all Armenians stating and making that connection, connecting the dots between genocides, and getting to the point of talking about Darfur. Now, you know, just a few weeks ago, I shared with you that our dear friends, Gabriel and Katie J, who have done so much work with the Darfuri refugees, were right there in Armenia. We're in Armenia tending to the refugees of the war from last year. And this is fantastic when you think about it, that we have these connections now, that we as Armenians can have a statement on the world stage. And if nothing else, I think this is what the power of this conference was all about. This is why I am so excited about it. And I'm filled with prayers for our Catholicos to keep that moving forward. It is difficult, because when you're so small in numbers, the tendency is for people to rally around and say, why aren't you looking around after your own problems? Why are you extending yourselves beyond yourselves? And really, that's very narrow-minded of people. And I think when you read something like this, when you hear something like what the Catholicos say, you understand that there is a broader mission out there. And so, bottom line, you know, this is a statement made by the head of the church, and it's something that we need to really focus in on and really be happy and excited about. So I want to bring your attention to that. As we get ready now in a few minutes, we're going to be looking at apologetics. We take a break every week to go through the song of the day. Song of the Week gives us a little chance to digest what's been said, maybe a little chance for you to go through the show notes while the song is playing. But I pick out something that, well, kind of hits us in the nerve for this week. And there's so much going on this week. Do you know that it is the 30th anniversary of independence in Armenia? Hard to believe. 30th anniversary. I was reading an article yesterday by some reverend who wrote that this is the Third Republic, that 1918 there was a republic, and then 1920 there was the Communist Republic of Armenia. This is the Third Republic of Armenia, and these are all nice little things. But you know what? This is the Republic of Armenia. This is what is here right now. It's in the today. And we have friends, we have dear friends. In fact, one of our dear members of In His Shoes, Maria, just returned from Armenia and said that, you know, there's a lot of apprehension, there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of fear of what can happen to this small little republic in time, especially considering that last year it was just attacked out of nowhere by the Azeris and the Turks. So there's a lot of fear, a lot of apprehension, and we should be on guard right now, on guard with the weapons that we have. I think the Catholicos and the statements made at this conference were very important. What we need to do as people observing these things is to bring it to the forefront, share it with people. I was very disappointed to see that this got very little press outside of a few people within the Armenian Church. A very, very important conference. And so let's take a break right now. We'll play a song. Give us a little time to digest. We'll be back with the second portion of today's Next Step. David Benoit. That is Freedom at Midnight. Freedom. That's the theme we are celebrating, especially this week as we talk about the independence of Armenia and the freedom that we all enjoy. Freedom to think, right? Yeah, we're going to get to that in a few moments. And it's okay to think. It's okay to disagree. It's okay to be someone else. Freedom at Midnight, this is a recording that was made in 1987. The artist is David Benoit. I will have a link on today's show notes. Hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. It was just really good. I needed that break. Well, it's good to be back with you for the second portion of today's Next Step. And it's just so good to be together, isn't it? Right? We get to talk about so many fun things, about connecting the dots in matters of faith, about things that matter in our lives. And we're going to be talking about apologetics. And yeah, it's what you might think it is. It's about apologies. Wait, Alexa, define apologetics.
Here's something I found on the web. According to crosswalk.com, the group is called apologetics, based on the word apologetics, which refers to a defense of the Christian faith. By the way, I have a routine you might like. I can wish you a good morning, and more. Do you want to try it?
No, you're already too invasive in my life, thank you.
No problem.
Okay, so apologetics, it's usually used within the Christian tradition. It's like a whole field. There's apologists from the first century, since the time of Christ. It's basically making arguments, apologizing, justifying what's being said. Apology. Like, it doesn't make sense, but I'm going to make sense out of it. Reasoned arguments or writings in justification of something, in particular the Christian faith. That's exactly what apologetics is. And in many senses, that's what we do in the Next Step, right? We apologize by not saying I'm sorry for the faith, but giving you an understanding of it by appealing to reason and saying, if A equals B and B equals C, therefore A has to equal C. That's logical, right? So why shouldn't our faith follow that same type of logic as well? And so I try to do that the best that I can here on the Next Step. But you know that I also appeal to mystery. I also go down another road of realizing our limitations as a human being. And this is not a defeatist attitude. It's not an attitude of saying that these things are not understandable because I cannot understand, but they're ununderstandable because that's the way they are. There's just certain restrictions, and life doesn't allow us to see certain things. So you can speculate all you want. And if, on the physical world, there's all kinds of limitations. You can't fly, right? I mean, you need some kind of mechanical device to fly. You can't just jump off of a building and expect to fly like a bird. Forget about that. I don't want anybody to try it and say, well, the guy dared me or something. Hey, here's a simple one, okay? Can you run a 4-minute mile? I mean, I remember this was one of those feats. This was one of those physical feats. And I'm sure people, I know that people have ran the 4-minute mile. And I don't know what the number, Alexa. How many people have ran a 4-minute mile?
Here's something I found on the web. According to letsrun.com, the number of people who have actually run a sub-4-minute mile is recorded as 1,440.
Okay, so it is possible. 1,440 people have done it under a mile. But my point is not about about the mile itself. Let's use something absurd, 3.5 minutes. Let's say 3 minutes, okay? Is it possible to run the mile in 3 minutes? Well, it requires what? First of all, practice. It requires day and night. It means concentration. But you can do all the concentration. You can practice all you want. But it also requires physical ability. You need to have the proper muscles. You need to have the proper stride. You need to have the energy. You need to have the wherewithal to put together a three-minute mile. And until now, it hasn't been done. Okay, so is it possible to do? Yeah, it's possible. But you're not a defeatist by saying, I can't run a mile in 3 minutes. There's nothing wrong with saying that. I know there's a lot of talk about positive thought, but part of that is also to understand our limitations. And so too, when it comes in the world of faith, to understand that when we talk about God, it's the word itself, God, is something beyond definition. And so it's just amazing when people come up and define God. I mean, basically, God is beyond definition. It encompasses everything, right? The word God itself is beyond what we can fathom, we can understand. That's what the word itself means. It's this ultimate, the divine being, the creator. And it's beyond what you can understand. And so, in a sense, that definition of God is an apologetic, right? We're apologizing. It's an apologetic. It's trying to justify. And I use it too. Everybody uses it. We're trying to justify something. We're trying to give the reasoned arguments for something. And we do this all the time. And especially within religion, because there are so many open ends to it. Jesus says one thing and it is interpreted in 1,000 different ways. If not 1,000, then 900 ways. If not 900, then 500 ways. But look at the number of denominations. And this makes the entire Christian faith look bogus, look like something's wrong, because you can't seem to be defining it. You can't be setting up the parameters for it because there are so many different variations of it. I put out a small little video just a few days ago. It was almost in reaction. As you know, last week I shared with you a couple weeks ago, we had a very tragic death within our church. A young priest, 40 years old, who succumbed to COVID-19. And I made a small little video last week and I shared it with people just about, like, we've got to start taking this thing seriously. I mean, it's just amazing to me how everybody has become an expert when it comes to COVID-19. And it's that expertise is not found anywhere else in any other profession. And I use this example that I've shared with you many times. I go to the library and I check out a book on brake repair. That doesn't make me an expert on brake repair. You would not trust your car to me for me to fix your brakes. And if you did, you'd be a fool. Look, I'm telling you, I read a book about brakes. That doesn't make me an expert on brakes. And yet we have everybody who's read an article here, has picked up something on the internet, has heard a politician say this or that, and has come out and they're making their comments about a world health crisis. It's a world health crisis. And what is your qualification? Do I have that opportunity to ask you that? I mean, think about it. You bring your car to a man to have your brakes repaired. Shouldn't you ask, have you done any brake repairs? At the very least, right? What if the guy said, no, you're my first? I mean, it's a legitimate question. Do you know what you're doing? How about if you ask, like, do you have any training in brake repair? No, I just read a book. Excuse me, I'm just thinking how silly this is. But this is how silly it is when people are getting up and professing all kinds of knowledge about things that they don't know anything about. And you've got people in the health industry, you've got doctors who have studied this, who have patients. And last week, I wanted to be a priest that was out there and said that, you know, I've buried enough people this year, buried beyond what I should be doing. And I'm not the only priest. There are priests all around me, and everyone I'm talking to is doing funerals. And when you ask them what's the reason, they're telling you overwhelmingly it's COVID-19. And the numbers are unlike any other year. Okay, so connect those dots. Something's off. And I just made I just came down with a very simple request in that video. And I said, please take this seriously. This is a serious thing. If you haven't done so, get vaccinated, wear a mask. And so I was sent a story by somebody. And this was after this person pulled the plug on me. Which is fine, you know, I've told you, like, you know, if you don't like what I'm saying, this is one of the easiest things to dismiss. You don't like what I'm saying over here, don't listen, right? It's a podcast. You don't need to tune into it. A few years ago when we were in Turkey, we were there during the Ramadan, and the calls to prayer in the middle of the night, it was like 2 or 3 in the morning in our hotel room. You just hear right outside the window this loudspeaker calling people to prayer. It's just like, you know, they're just this horrible PA system. It's not even a loudspeaker. It's one of those PA horns, you know, where the sound in it is just very tinny. And just in the middle of the night, imagine waking up. It's just being pumped in your room. This is the call to prayer. Well, thank God we're not in that thing. This is a podcast. You choose to listen to me. You don't want to listen to it. Don't download it. Just don't subscribe to it. Don't take it. Don't listen to it, right? I mean, not only me, but anything. Anything you don't like. You watch in television, you're watching a show on Netflix, you don't like it, turn it off. In fact, we did that the other night. There was a horrible movie on. I just said, I can't take this anymore. Turned it off, right? It's over. It's over. What a luxury that is. Anyway, somebody sent me this. It's the story of a donkey and a tiger. I'll share it with you. It's kind of funny. The grass is blue, said the donkey to the tiger. The tiger replied, no, the grass is green. The discussion became heated, and the two decided to submit the issue to an arbitration, and they approached the lion. As they approached the lion on his throne, the donkey started screaming, Your Highness, isn't it true that the grass is blue? The lion replied, If you believe it's true, the grass is blue. The donkey rushed forward and continued, The tiger disagrees with me, contradicts me, and annoys me. Please punish him. The king then declared, The tiger will be punished with 3 days of silence. The donkey jumped with joy and went on his way, content and repeated, The grass is blue, the grass is blue. The tiger asked the lion, Your Majesty, why have you punished me? After all, the grass is green. The lion replied, You've known and seen the grass is green. The tiger asked, So why do you punish me? The lion replied, That has nothing to do with the question of whether the grass is blue or green. The punishment is because it is degrading for a brave, intelligent creature like you to waste time arguing with an ass. Or on top of that, you came and bothered me with the question just to validate something you already knew was true. And then it concludes, the biggest waste of time is arguing with a fool and fanatic who doesn't care about truth or reality, but only the victory of his beliefs and illusions. Never waste time on discussions that make no sense. Well, there's your argument against apologetics, right? That's, there it is. Don't waste your time. I mean, this person's basically telling me you're spitting against the wind. It's coming right back to you. We're not going to listen to any of the stuff that you're telling us because we know it. We know the truth. We know the grass is green. You don't know it. but you're an ass, and I can't argue with you, so I'm just going to walk away from you. Wow. Basically, cut off discussion and just finish it. But here's the catch-all. It's putting yourself in that position of the tiger. Have you ever thought for a moment what colorblind people see? Have you ever thought about it? What do colorblind people see? How do you know your green is green for everybody? What do colorblind people see? They see gray, shades of gray. A colorblind person looks at the grass and sees gray. That person's an ass for not seeing it the way you see it. How about people who have been through so much difficulty in their lives? People who have been beaten by an abusive father, a non-caring mother, and growing up in dysfunctional family form, and then coming in front of you and you talking to them. How about just dismissing them as an ass and saying, well, they don't get it. They don't get it. It's not worth my time. So what's happening now is this, forgetting about apologetics, forgetting about trying to sift through and understand things, but just, I am right and you are wrong. This is one of the most dangerous things that we're up against right now. This idea that somehow people have developed new skills without developing them. In other words, I can be an expert at brake repair by reading a book on brakes. I can tell you all about God by reading the Bible. I could read the Bible and I know everything I need to know about who God is, what God demands of me, and what God wants. I can study the different political winds that are coming. I can make my judgment, and then that's it, because this is the way it is. I am right, and you are wrong. I mean, it sounds absurd, right? But why isn't it absurd in the real world? That's what we're up against. That's what we're seeing all around us. And when we talk about intolerance, that's what intolerance is. I am right and you are wrong. My way or the highway. This is the way it is. And if you've ever worked with anybody like that, if you've ever had a relationship with anybody like that, you know that it's a very difficult position to be in when you're not in that my way. It's very difficult. And what happens is you have a breakdown of society and understanding. It's difficult for people like me, especially because I was brought up in such an open forum of ideas. Politically, we would argue, you know, you would have friends who would be of different camps, of different political persuasions, and you would be able to argue within your family too. You'd be able to share ideas. This is what I believe. And you know what? One of the greatest thrills that we would always have as friends was being able to say, hey, you know what? I see it your way. I understand it your way. And to hear your friend turn to you and say, you know what? You do make sense. Even though I don't understand this, you do make sense. And what happens at that point? You have respect. You don't need to call people names. You're a donkey, you're an ass, you're a tiger. I'm a tiger, you're an ass. I get it, you don't get it. Why? Why are we going through these things? There's certain information that comes to us daily, and we have appointed people to be experts in these fields. Not an appointment made by on political standards, but people who have gone to school, who have read more than a brake manual to repair brakes. I take my car to a certified mechanic. What does that mean? That mechanic has gone to school, understands what those compressions are, what the brakes need to do, so that when you tap on the brake, what happens on the outside. And that gives me the certainty that when I do need my brakes, when I'm hitting that red light at 50 miles an hour and I put on my brakes, my car's going to stop. That's the guarantee that I have. And so too, in life, there are different people who have different specialties. Let's appreciate those things. Rather than calling people names and, you know, you're an ass and I'm a tiger, I get it and you don't get it. I mean, how would you feel? You go to your mechanic and the guy says, well, I'm the tiger. I'm going to fix your car, and if you don't, you're an ass. No, you don't run life like that. But for some reason, we've gotten to the point of not accepting each other's answers. Now, I want to make a little point, because I think it needs to be made. I think people will say, well, isn't that what the church is? I mean, you were talking about from the top down and these decisions are making. No, I've bought into that, okay? Like, I went into the church of free conscience, and I know that that's my church. I know the church has a hierarchy. I know at the end of the day, there's a bishop, and I'm not the bishop. Okay, so I have entered into the service of the church. Understand, much like in entering the service in the military or any place that there is a hierarchy, you realize you're not the commander-in-chief. You want to serve. You want to be at your level. You want to serve. You realize you're not the lieutenant, but you may be a sergeant. You may be something else, and that's your position. And if you do this with knowledge of going in there, then you can't sit there and hit your head against the wall saying, we're going to change it, because this is what you bought into. Listen, as you can see, I've laid out all kinds of stuff today for you to think about. We can go in a lot of directions, and I have throughout the years. There's so much that we've talked about. I wanted to lay this out because it was just kind of funny getting this response to my article or to my sermonette the other day. It was just funny because really we have gotten to a world that just doesn't want to tolerate anything that that's remotely makes sense. And by me saying that, yeah, I've justified my position as well. And that's what I get to do because I've got the microphone today. All right, let's take a break right now. Here's Susie to make their announcement, and I will be back in a few moments just to finish up, okay?
Before getting back to the Next Step with Father Vazquez, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The Next Step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you, all of you, listening. Yeah, that's important. Thank you for listening, supporting, for being there, and most importantly, for your prayers. Listen, this Sunday I'm going to be at the Mother Cathedral at St. Leon, Reventians, Armenian Cathedral in Burbank. I'll be celebrating the Divine Liturgy. Starts at 10:30, and you can watch it. That's Pacific time. On the Western Diocese Facebook page, I'll be offering the sermon. I thought for this week I'd do something a little bit different because, you know, we underestimate the role of the saints. And when I looked at the saints that we celebrate during this week, there is a group of saints that I guarantee you have not heard, one of which is Saint Pepron. Yeah, Saint Pepperon. That was the name of my aunt. It's the name of my daughter-in-law. It just, I love that name. It, ever since I learned it was my aunt's name, I used to love saying it. Let me say it that way, more than loving the name. I love saying that name, Pepperon. So I finally went out and I said, I got to figure out who this is. So I did the transliteration. What I did is I took the name and ascribed the English characters to it. And it turns out it is Febronia, Saint Febronia. And she happens to be from Nisibis. And in, if you're familiar with Armenian church, patristics, with our saints, we have one of the most famous saints of all, Saint James of Nisibis, or Surphagop Mutspana Hayrabed. Saint James of Nisibis, Mutspana Hayrabed, celebrated in December every year. Well, this is Febronia, and I got a chance to read her story, the usual martyrdom. And by usual, I mean like it's the similar martyrdom that so many saints have had, but in no way trying to diminish how important it is and how impactful it is. And that's what I'll be talking about, the impact that it makes on our lives. Also, we're going to have some people joining us from the United States Air Force because it marks an anniversary of the flight to Sasnashen in 1958. I've been in touch with the U.S. Air Force, and a few of them will be joining us online. Like I said, it's on the Western Diocese Facebook page. 10:30 a.m. Pacific time starts the Divine Liturgy. And of course, if you're in the area, we're in the Burbank Cathedral. Well, that does it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. If it got you to think about what's going on in the world and how we're reacting, what our reactions are, then we accomplished what we set out to do. So I want to thank you for joining us today and invite you to join us online and, of course, next week. On behalf of Susie, our producer, and myself, Father Voskin, I invite you to look at the show notes and to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
The part of Alexa was played by Alexa and appears courtesy of Amazon.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.